Welcome, everyone, to the Office Practicum Pediatrics Podcast. That's Pediatrics with a K. I'm Sean Rossler, Senior Instructional Designer on OP's Knowledge Team and the host of the Pediatrics Podcast. And our mission on the show is to make your lives easier. No, we won't be able to fix your Wi-Fi so your learn-at-home kids can stop pestering you about it being glitchy. But we do hope you will leave this podcast learning something new. From the first play date we ever had to, let's be honest, our present-day professional work environment, there's one thing that's always been encouraged but difficult to do, and that's sharing. What we view as ours versus what we view as theirs can drastically affect the way a situation unfolded, can it? And while when we're a kid, it's pretty cut and dry, you know, it's her turn now, let him have the ball and so on, you wouldn't think such a situation exists in healthcare, but, well, it kind of has. Patient information has always felt like it's clinically ours, but there's a fine line between sharing and protecting, as well as maintaining privacy. Fortunately, the 21st Century Cures Act seeks to balance this line, and we just happen to have someone with us today who knows all about it. On today's podcast, Dr. Sue Cressley joins us again to discuss the 21st Century Cures Act and how it will impact the way we store electronic patient information. Safe, secure, involved, connected, can we achieve them all? Let's find out. Dr. Cressley, welcome again to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Absolutely. As always, an honor. I know you're a busy human being, but the knowledge that we could tap into on this topic and, you know, given your wealth of knowledge on it, just, you know, could not be a missed opportunity. So, you know, folks who want to know all about Dr. Cressley's backdrop can go back a mere two episodes. She was on two episodes ago. But, you know, for those who maybe weren't there with us, Dr. Cressley, would you give us kind of the Cliff Notes overview of just who you are, what you do, and how you got here?
Happy to, Sean. So I have over 30 years of experience in general pediatrics, and I've been the medical director for Office Practicum for over a decade. And I also have my hands in all things that are pediatric health IT, which brings me to this conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, health IT, electronic health records go hand in hand. And anyone who's ever worked with an electronic health record knows how paramount privacy is. You know, when I used to train classes and the topic of HIPAA would come up, I'd tell people what HIPAA stood for. And, you know, I'd ask the class, what does this stand for? And they'd be like, health insurance portability. I said, no, help to instill paranoia and anxiety. Like, you know, just to make sure they're all over it and they're paying attention. But, you know, privacy is really that serious a topic. And so with that in mind, where did this Cures Act come from?
So that's a really important question, but I want to take a step back. There's actually several aspects to the 21st Century Cures Act, including the option for pediatric certification of an electronic health record. But the one that has everyone nervous and what we're going to concentrate on today is the information blocking aspect of the rule. And a large portion of the 21st Century Cures Act is really about allowing patients to have easy access to their own EHI, and that's electronic health information. Now, I want to stop and say that that term may be new to some of our listeners. When we store personal health information electronically, such as in an electronic health record, that's now called electronic health information, or EHI. Mm-hmm. And the Cures Act is intended to shift the mindset from the patient having to ask us for their health information and maybe us providing it on a fob or a printout, mm-hmm. to them having their own electronic access to what really is their information. This has really brought to the forefront the concern about privacy issues that you raised, especially related to children and adolescents and sensitive information. And pediatricians have been yelling about this for decades, mm-hmm. But it is now actually getting some attention with the 21st Century Cures Act. And the practice information blocking is only part of the Cures Act. It really applies to healthcare systems as well. So, for example, if you're an independent practice like mine and your big health system refuses to send you electronic information about admissions, discharges, consult notes, et cetera, because you're not owned by them or you don't always refer to their specialists, mm-hmm. when this rule takes effect, mm-hmm. actually independent practices will be able to report to them as potentially information blocking that's wow. important for caring for our own patients.
Wow. I mean, that's a really important just concept overall, you know. Quick question, just because I've always, you know, from my EHR days, referred to it as PHI. Now, is EHI replacing PHI, or do the two terms still exist?
So this two terms really exist, but most you're going to find in the health IT world, it moves to EHI, because mm-hmm. most mm-hmm. of the information that we are now recording in systems is electronic versions of PHI. And mm-hmm. PHI included on paper, right? If you had a chart rack, mm-hmm. that was PHI, and you had to be careful about how you released it. Mm-hmm. EHI, since it's electronic, and it's not just releasing the information, it's releasing the information in an electronic format mm-hmm. if the receiver wants to receive it that way. So if a patient calls you up and say, hey, can you fax my, you know, immunization records to the school, they're asking for it in a faxed way.
Gotcha.
But part of the 21st Century Cures Act is also information for patients, and they're going to be steered towards asking, hey, can you send that electronic information to my specialist, or can I get it off the portal and send it to them myself?
Gotcha. So they do, they both exist. All EHI is PHI, but not all PHI is EHI.
That is correct.
Makes total sense. I'm saying that just because I'm going to have to think about that for an hour afterwards to make sense of it for myself. That's how thick I am. You know, looking at health information, though, you know, ours versus theirs, you know, I remember it as early as 2005 when I started. You know, it is a balancing game when it comes to PHI and now this new EHI. How can we as an organization, you know, how can we as practitioners balance our viewpoints in this tug of war? And how does the Cures Act kind of support that effort?
Well, the Cures Act actually probably forces us into a place that many healthcare providers have been really uncomfortable. And it is time, the time of patriarchal medicine, where we as clinicians tell the patient what to do, mm-hmm. is over, and frankly, it should be. We must begin to look at this through the patient and family lens. And in pediatrics, we also have to remember that having a way to segregate sensitive information that should not be shared for mm-hmm. reasons of documented confidentiality or potential harm is different than for most adults who are responsible for their own care. And this Cures Act was really driven in the adult model, which is no surprise to us as pediatricians. But mm-hmm. I want to step mm-hmm. back and make our listeners think about this. This really isn't a solely pediatric issue. Whenever a healthcare proxy has access to information, the needs of safe care must be balanced with confidentiality. Mm-hmm. Think about an elderly parent who's having some cognitive decline. You know, what if this was my mother? How much of her personal history should be shared with me, who may now be her healthcare proxy? Do I have the right to know that she was treated for a sexually transmitted infection when she was younger, or maybe even recently? So this really balancing act that you're talking about is important, but we can't, this is going to take the precision of a surgical knife, not a sledgehammer. We mm-hmm. can't say we're not sharing any information because we can't protect it. That's information blocking. It's right. How do we protect the right information from the right people? And that's going to take the skill mm-hmm. of a surgical knife.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that information can be so key. Like, you personally, as well as, you know, our children or those in our care, you know, I've got parents, I've got kids, I've got, my youngest is on spectrum. And so, you know, definitely we're very interested with that information. And I always tend to feel better if I have access and can be equipped to and with information. Is there backing to that? Is there, like, I don't want to say a research-backed correlation, but, you know, is knowledge truly power when it comes to self and others' care?
So it can be, and there's mm-hmm. lots of research. You mentioned that word, and it's true that when there's lots of research that shows when patients are involved in their own health care, they have better outcomes. And that starts with them having access to their own information in a timely manner so mm-hmm. that we can truly make shared decisions with them. Yeah. Let's face it, the patients and families contribute the information, and many times they come in for a visit. We're just the recorders, right? Mm-hmm. We're the stenographers. Mm-hmm. They pay for the care. It's really their information, which we as healthcare professionals often manage for them, but a lot of the information is really theirs. Where we get stuck as providers is where we think out loud in the record about what we might know or not know or are considering. Mm-hmm. But that's an important conversation for patients as well. Mm-hmm. If we refer a patient to the hematologist for anemia, we need to say to them, look, I don't think this is leukemia, but it might be. Here's why I don't think it is, but I'm considering it in very lower. I think this might be iron deficiency. I think this might be a genetic anemia. But on the very lower considerations, that's a possibility. Just put that in your note, but not share that with the family. Mm-hmm. They may decide, anemia, why the heck am I going to the specialist and paying a $40 copay? I'm not going. Uh-huh. If you share what you're thinking with them in a sensitive way, they're on the same level playing field, and they'll be like, oh, I'm going to that specialist. I want to know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's kind of change focus here. You know, obviously the knowledge being power to me, the patient or the patient advocate, that's one thing. So let's look at the regulations and the tenets and so on that this piece of legislation is going to bring to practices and practitioners. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Happy to. So like any regulation, the devil's in the details, and I encourage our listeners to take advantage of materials that have been produced by the Office of the National Coordinator, the AMA, the AAP, and others. The information blocking part of the 21st Century Cures Act has a specific timeline and regulations that are spelled out. In a nutshell, it says that anyone who is a custodian of electronic health information, or EHI, can't by default block other entities to have reasonable electronic access to that information. And patients and other healthcare providers will be able to file a complaint that someone is blocking their access to information, just like, you know, there might be a HIPAA breach. This is a potential information blocker where there will be an investigative body, and all of those penalties are not yet well defined. That's all in process now. Mm-hmm. But just know that we need to be working to reasonably release EHI in an electronic format. And there are exceptions to providing access, but you can't just globally refuse. Mm-hmm. If a parent asks for electronic access to their chart because they want to leave your practice or visit a specialist, you have to give it to them in the format that they ask for and in a reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. And most of our electronic access to patient really centers around something called the CCDA, or Consolidated Clinical Document Architecture, which is basically a standard of which electronic systems talk to each other. Many EHRs actually satisfy these requirements through a patient portal. And so if practices don't have a portal, then they need to figure out a path to supply the information electronically or get their portal implementation moving. Mm-hmm. For example, if a family's waiting on a lab test and they want to receive it electronically as soon as you do, you have to figure out a way you're going to be more proactive about having these conversations with families and releasing that information. People worry all the time. I don't want the mom calling me and saying the RDW is low and it's meaningless. So when you order the CBC, talk to them. This may come back. There's parts of this information test that will be meaningful. There are parts that are not relevant to pediatrics or to your problem. Mm-hmm. We promise to reach out to you proactively, but we'll give you the result as soon as we have it. Mm-hmm. And some practices are like, well, no, I want everything to be reviewed by the doctor first. Well, I hate to tell you, but they already are reviewing it on the Quest portal, and they already have the results. And if there's a concerning result and you don't reach out to them in a timely manner, then this is about shared relationships. I would rather than have a lab result get lost to me and nobody saw it, the mom call me up and say, hey, Dr. K, mm-hmm. like, did you see my CBC? Well, actually, I haven't gotten to it yet today. Let me take a look. Oh, my. That's a really low hemoglobin. I promise the end of the day, we're going to have a longer conversation. Let's talk about this.
Perfect. Perfect. And looking at adoption then, regulations aside, how long do clinics and providers, practitioners have to be ready for this act?
So the applicability date has been moved to April 5th of 2021, and that's a lot, got pushed back a lot because people are trying to balance the needs of COVID-19 public health emergency with this rule. Okay. But I would say that practices should be working now to take inventory and make a list of the following items. I'm an action item girl. So first of all, figure out what is your current practices process for sharing electronic health information with families. Like, do you have gaps, and what do we need to do to improve those gaps? Do we not have any way of a family seeing an electronic version of their practice, their office note, or their problem list? And then the second thing is, how can we identify and safely share information with patients and families that follows our state-specific confidentiality laws and respects confidentiality where it is? So what are our state laws about adolescent privacy? How are we going to comply with them? And what is a practice are we doing to make sure that we're following them? And then I would say start writing a practice policy and procedure about how you do share the maximum information safely and how you will individually decide what can and should be withheld on an individual basis. This can't be a broad policy saying we'll only release lab information after specifically reviewed and tagged by a provider as safe to release, because we know sometimes we get a positive pregnancy test. Mm-hmm. That will not fly. That's information blocking. Instead, you're going to have to figure out how to just protect those sensitive labs, gotcha, but share the rest of the information broadly and timely.
Understood. So from patient to practice, that's the 21st Century Cures Act. Anything else before we wrap that you want the listeners to know about this incredibly important piece of legislation?
First of all, don't panic, but on the other hand, don't ignore this. We must thoughtfully figure out how we truly consider the patient shared living information, where we collaborate with families to communicate, update, share information that actually promotes health and optimum outcomes.
Gotcha. And once again, I feel like a broken record when I say this, but you make it all sound both so logical and so beautifully simple in the best possible way. So, Dr. Kressley, thank you once again for taking time out of what I know is your busy day to be here with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Sean. Look forward to the next time.
Absolutely. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Office Practicum Pediatrics Podcast, or OP3. Be sure to watch for updates and other announcements via both our OP community listserv as well as our social media outlets. And if you, yes you, have an idea for a guest or would like to be a guest yourself, reach out to the show. We'd love to hear from you. Be well, stay safe, and remember, we can always learn new tricks.